I just have to ask, how did you do it? For someone starting, a young person, creative in any field.
Patience is the thing that doesn't really exist today because of the telephone, because of Instagram and Twitter. Everybody's got such a short concentration.
Excuse me, I'm very analog. I'm not part of
that. Even with analog and being happy to grow the business very gently and slowly. And I think probably that's why it's had such a long life, because you never really pushed it too much. And there's a big problem, I think, with greed in the world now, where people overexpand, they get too big.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Well, I think so, yeah. I think so.
Hello, beautiful people, and welcome back to another glorious episode of Are We On Air? We have so much to celebrate this week, and I'm so very grateful for it all. First, we're celebrating our 100th episode today, and what an episode I've got for you. Then we're also celebrating this week's opening of our very first long-term pop-up slash studio slash shop, aka our kiosk boutique on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles. And last but not least, we are celebrating our newfound friendship with Spotify. And I'm so happy that Spotify sees the cultural value in this little show of mine and decided to join us and hop on board on the Are We On Air train. Who knew that this little idea 4 years ago would turn into this magnificent thing that we all love and cherish? Now, let's get this anniversary party started with none other than the legendary fashion designer, interior designer, curator, business, and all-around funny man, Sir Paul Smith. Seriously, one of the funnest interviews we've done so far. I've had the honor to visit Sir Paul at his studio slash office slash storage of all good things in London a good couple of months ago. We listened to music.
The famous leaf blower.
We laughed, we danced, we cried. It was a very jolly afternoon.
The key to success.
We went over his life soundtrack. Of course. But also had to chat about his famous friends and trying to learn a secret or two on how he did it. From his first designs to building a whole PS universe. We covered everything from his relationships with music icons such as David Bowie.
This is an album we did with a special limited edition with somebody called David Botox.
Patti Smith, Mick Jagger, and seeing Jimi Hendrix live.
I saw him play with his teeth, and amazing. And then the one time I went, there was so much feedback with the Marshall speakers.
But also his relationships with designers such as Signori Giorgio Armani and their shared innovation of the 70s, the deconstructed blazer. Anyways, stories for days. We also covered his philosophy when it comes to designing and what his approach was when he was asked to curate a Picasso exhibition at the Picasso Museum in Paris. I highly recommend to watch this episode on our YouTube and Spotify channels, as there's so much to see and to discover. And for all of our LA people and visitors, you can find us from this week onwards at 8224 Sunset Boulevard, right across from the Chateau Marmont in Hollywood, California. We'll of course keep you updated on our opening hours, events, product launches, book signings, collabs, live interviews, and DJ sets. And you'll get the update on our Instagram channel at AreWeOnAir. On this note, a big thank you to all of you, my beloved and beautiful listeners. What a journey it's been so far, and we've only just begun. Much love, and I'll speak to you soon.
Get them to put the fire alarm on.
Can you move a bit?
Yeah, sure.
To the right,
so yeah.
Maybe a little bit less, sorry.
You don't want us to hold hands?
Sit on my lap.
Et voilà.
Hello.
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 So, Paul.
Thank you. Welcome to...
The madness.
Yes. correct.
What a pleasure. What an honor. Yeah.
Thank you.
I love your space.
This is Claude.
Claude.
The dog. Yeah. Yeah. A fan for over 40 years that had been sending things to me, and they arrive without any message. I have no idea who it is. And they're never in a box. They arrive like this.
Oh, so I heard about that.
Yeah, so the goose just arrived.
I heard about it last night at dinner. This is such.
He just arrived.
Just put the stamps on it. You don't package it. Yeah. I heard about it.
Yeah, I have no idea who it's from.
I know who it's from now.
Oh, do you?
I won't tell you. That is genius. I didn't know you can just ship stuff like that.
Do you speak duck?
I do. With a slight accent. So welcome. Yeah, we're in your beautiful studio. I guess you're home, really.
Yeah.
You spend most of your time here.
That's correct, yeah.
Listen, we have a lot in common, and we're going to get to it, but I'm a fan of being super eclectic, slightly all over the place, and creating something cohesive out of the madness.
Which is what we do here.
Oh my God, I'm in heaven. There's so much to explore I don't even know where to start. So many beautiful paintings, artworks, books, knickknacks, bikes, goose.
Geese.
Yeah, exactly, plural.
This is where I work and where I design, and I have my team downstairs. We have a building in Covent Garden, London, with 5 floors, 180 people, and this is where...
The magic happens.
We hope. Yeah.
Well, hopefully today we'll create some magic here. Well, first of all, thank you for your beautiful suit.
You're welcome. It looks very, very, very nice.
I love a seersucker. Yeah. A lot of compliments from my seersucker. So, and I travel a lot, so it's perfect.
Very light.
Very light.
It doesn't crease. It's great. I was in Hong Kong last week wearing this. Yeah. Good job, you.
Maybe I'm going to get it signed then. Talking about lightness, we just saw your beautiful bike collection in the other room.
That's right. Yeah, there's a lot of bikes. Nearly everything you can see in this room, I'm very privileged and blessed that have come from fans around the world. So
really? So most of these are just...
I haven't bought any. I didn't buy any of the bikes.
Really? The bikes are even sent to you?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the one in the corner is from Chris Froome, who won the Tour de France on that bike. And it's from Bradley Wiggins. And I've got, nice bicycles. Lots of books, lots of objects, beautiful things from around the world. So very lucky man.
Very lucky. Do you ride them?
I've got the ones in there I ride. Yeah. I've got my chosen few.
Well, shall we talk about music? I think
sure.
We should, right? And you're a music man. You just showed me some incredible record, which we're going to get to in a minute, and your cassette tapes. I love the sound of this little radio in the back.
I know.
You know, it's not like this perfectly full sound.
I've got a beautiful cassette player from the 1970s from Japan, which I've still got a big collection of cassettes. Most of the things that we'll end up talking about here are from my era, because although I'm... still work a lot with a lot of the young musicians, a lot of them actually. But, you know, obviously you sort of hang on to the things that you remember from when you were just starting out, the first trip you did to Japan, the first trip, you know, you did around the world, etc. I apologize in advance to everybody, because it's very much from my era, 1960s to 1970s.
Nothing to apologize about. It's exactly my era.
Yours is 1860. Mine's 1960.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But why don't we start with your earliest significant musical memory that shaped you as an artist?
Yeah, initial one. I've had to write it down because I can't always remember dates.
That's okay.
But it was... my interest in Bob Dylan for a long time. And then suddenly in 1965, when he went to the Newport Folk Festival, and he suddenly had an electric guitar. And it was the new album, he was promoting a new album called Bringing It All Back Home. And one track called Maggie's Farm, for instance. It's all electric, but Maggie's Farm was... so completely different to what he's ever done before. Mm. And I think the audience or the crowd at the festival didn't like it at all.
There was a backlash.
Really big backlash. Yeah. But for me, what was so interesting was that you can always keep moving, you can always do new things, you mustn't get settled into the chair too much, you know, especially in my world of fashion, it's about today and tomorrow. So that was a really interesting example to me of, come on, let's get on with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now I'm into this and now I'm into that. And then, of course, eventually everybody loved what, you know, all his fans came round to the fact that he was a more modern sound, more jazz related, more folk jazz and a mix. It was good. Yeah. So bringing it all back home, Maggie's Farm.
Maggie's Farm. An artist or creative point of view, Bob Dylan, Miles Davis, those are names that just would not stand still. They would just keep going, even though, like in this case, would alienate their fandoms, right? But because I was looking forward, and same with you. So how difficult is it actually to, let's say, move away from your core identity in a way? Are you allowed to completely venture out? Are you completely changed the chapter?
The main thing with my world, I mean, I've been in business a long time now, which is in fashion is quite a rarity because, as you know, in fashion, music, restaurants, cars, you know, they come and they go, they come and they go. And, you know, I'm 108 years old now. And
I'm older.
Excuse
me. Yeah.
No, but so I've been doing it a long time. So therefore, the answer to your question is that really you need to nudge. Just not completely push in new directions because that alienates the shops you sell to around the world, and we work in 65 countries. So you have to be careful you don't go too radical, do change too much. But then you always need to just change a little. And that relates very much to music, you know, Talking Heads, to people like Van Morrison, to, of course, the Chameleon, David Bowie, you know, who is a good mate of mine. And he was the king of being able to change things, you know, which was very interesting.
But he always had radical changes, no? Yeah. He wasn't just
he
pushing
was a bit
the envelope,
radical.
He was just like, bam.
No, he was, yeah. So take that back. Let's just go backwards a minute. Well, apart from David Bowie.
Yeah, that was very good.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, David was more radical, it's true.
Yeah.
But a lot of the others, you know, they just wanted to move forward. You know, because people just get bored, not the public necessarily, but, you know, as a musician or as a chef or as a fashion designer, you just want to still be creative, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't, often people who stay with their same thing, sometimes it just dates and then you fall by the wayside, you know.
And for some of these creatives, and talking about David, many people might not know, but he was also a painter. Like he was pushed, you know, looking at different mediums and fields.
Absolutely.
Same with you, who's so eclectic. Yes, there's fashion, but you do everything, you know.
I've worked in different areas, which I like to do that because it scares me a bit, you know, because, you know, fashion, because I've been doing it for a long time now, so... I still adore doing it, but I can do it. Mm. Whereas, you know, suddenly working on a car for Mini or a bicycle or a camera, then, you know, like, oh my gosh, you know, and can you do that? And, oh, this takes 4 months and that will cost 5,000, you know, euros. So you have to work it out, which is great, very exciting, actually.
Mm. How do you approach like a collaboration on a new
I'm very lucky that I get offered lots of collaborations all the time, you know, quite a lot a month. And normally I just
pick and choose.
I normally say no to most of them, to be honest. But and I just think, well, what's the joy of this project? You know, what will it be? It's never financial. It's always to do with, oh, that could be interesting. Or sometimes it's like, do I ever want to meet the person again? But anyway, don't say that. Don't tell anybody. Don't tell that.
What was your favorite call ever? Let's flip it. What was your favorite call ever?
No, it's the challenge of something. I mean, like I did Leica cameras, and you know, my dad was an amateur photographer, so his dream was to have a Leica camera one day. He never got that dream. But when I was asked to do that, I thought that would be lovely. That'd be so nice to do that for my dad, you know.
Yeah. What's your favorite David Bowie track?
Oh gosh, I suppose Hunky Dory. I don't know why. There's lots. Too many, aren't there? Too many.
Never ending.
Yeah. He used to come here and...
What was he like in private?
He used to call me Smithy, I loved. Smithy, what's that over there? Why have you got that? What's in that box? Very inquisitive. Very, very inquisitive person. Always wanted to know. I mean, obviously, with his mind, this room was just so magical for him because... You know, he'd look at some vintage postage stamps and that would turn into a journey, which would then turn into a song or, you know. So it was a privilege to know him. It was really lovely, very special.
Wow.
Patty comes here a lot. She's
friend of the show. We love Patty.
Yeah. No, she's the hardest thing when Patty comes is she wants to spend the day here because, you know, there's a lot to look at. But normally my schedule is like, right, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock.
Mini calling, I gotta go.
I just leave her in the other room.
Yeah.
And then she's just there all day.
I love that.
Yeah, she just sits in that big chair over there.
It is a very inspiring space, though.
Correct, yeah.
I mean, that's why I love just even being in libraries in general, just not so much to actually... Of course, you read, but just to be surrounded
by the ambience. The building here is really lovely because we have the floor below is where we design all the textiles and the print, and then the other room. Two floors down is architects there, so they design my shops and the furniture designers as well. So the building is full of this lovely energy, and we get lots of nice visitors. So that's nice for the. You know, for all of us in the building, like the people that were just leaving when they're from New York, the people that just came in as you did. And then we have lots of students and kids, school kids come round. They adore it, of course.
Yeah,
the last one that walked, there was a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old. They walked in this room. The little boy said, "I want to sleep here." And then
I'm sure you have a bed somewhere.
I'm sure there probably is a bed under there. There is a desk under there, which I've never seen, actually.
Last time was 1960.
I remember that desk.
Talking about that year, how would you describe yourself in 3 songs? Actually, let's make it a bit more complicated. 2 songs and 1 song that defines Paul Smith, the brand.
Gosh, that's tough. I mean, I love this, you know, this one.
You just played me this fantastic record.
Which is basically a gentleman called, how do we pronounce his name? Where is he? There. Here we go.
Dilson D'Souza.
Dilson D'Souza did not invent leaf playing, but he plays the leaf. Basically, he plays the leaf. And that really sums me up in the fact that it's always about something different, something alternative, not down the obvious route. I'm a great lover of, and hopefully I am a lateral thinker, you know, like, so not going down the obvious route, but saying, what if, let's try, let's see. And, you know, so somebody like him is just great because, you know, I know I'll play the leaf.
Have you tried it?
Yeah. The only thing is he needs to take a tree with him everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is quite, you know, difficult in a backpack. Yeah. So, you know, Jonathan Richmond. I love Jonathan Richmond. Yes. Yeah, I mean, and so, you know, he was very naughty with the song the called Picasso, Modern Lovers, and the Picasso one. Yeah.
Pablo Picasso.
Yeah. We can't say what's it. Yeah, but anyway, yeah. Pablo Picasso, everybody called an asshole. Not in New York. And then just music that just stays in my head, you know, Canned Heat from the 60s, On the Road Again, which was me because I was always on the road, you know. Take a hint from your mama, please, don't you cry no more, don't you cry no more. Take a hint from your mama, please, don't you cry no more, don't you cry no more. Cause it's soon one morning down the road I'm gone. Going down that long, old, lonesome road all by myself. So the actual words are not really relevant to me, but the title, On the Road Again, because I started my business in 1850 when I was three. And so therefore, you know, starting out with just a small amount of savings.
Yeah.
The true story is I started when I was 21 and just a very small amount of savings. So I had to like literally travel around the world and just build the business alone. So music was always a real help for me. Astral Weeks by, you know, Van Morrison. If I ventured in the slipstream between the viaducts of your dream, where a mobile steel rims crack and the ditch in the back road stop, could you find me? Would you kiss my hand? Took me around the world, the Talking Heads, who I knew. And actually, I was at CBGB's the night that Talking Heads got signed up.
Really?
On Sire Records.
Wow.
Yeah, by Seymour Stein. He signed them. And I happened to be at CBGB's that night. And then luckily, David Byrne is a customer, and as are many others. Yeah.
Another friend of the show.
Yeah. Oh, really lovely. Yeah. He's good. I like it.
He's great. He's great.
Yeah, my first encounter with the music world was probably, in terms of clothes, was probably around 18 years of age. And that was because a friend of mine had a little clothing company, and they worked mostly with bands. And I designed and worked with this guy quite a lot. So I remember making some trousers for Jimmy Page from Zeppelin.
Wow.
And I measured his waist. I only know in inches, not in centimetres. So sorry, I'm very, very old, everybody. But he was 24-inch waist.
For compliments.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not old at all. Thank you very much.
Forever 21.
I've got legs and a teenager. He was 24-inch waist, and the bottom of the trousers were 28. So can you imagine? This skinny little, Jesus. And then this amazing shape.
Flares.
You know? Yeah, which was great. They were what they call pané velvet, you know, crushed velvet trousers.
Wow.
So I've been working with a lot of bands over the years. It's really lovely.
And the song that defines the brand Paul Smith for you?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I love all the things I've just talked about.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think it's a band that keeps moving, but not in a big radical way. Talking Heads, for instance, just bands that do things slightly differently. Let me just check my notes and see if I can see what I said here. John, the interviewer from Italy, asked me a question. It is John, isn't it?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Friends, Led Zeppelin. A track called Friends, 1970.
There you go.
Led Zeppelin 3. Because it's a song which is about love and helping people and energy, and that's me. See, it was written down here.
See, we came prepared.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm talking about Pablo Picasso. You just did an amazing curator, an incredible exhibition in Paris.
Which was an unbelievable thing to do.
How did that come about? Yeah. That's amazing.
A gentleman called Laurent Le Bon, who's now the boss of the Pompidou, came here in November 2019 and said that in 2023, it's going to be the 50th anniversary of Picasso's passing, and we want to show Picasso in a new light, and we'd like you to co-curate and art direct the entire exhibition.
Crazy.
And I said, are you sure you've got the right Smith? you mean John Smith or Peter Smith or Bill Smith? And I said, I'd love to think about it over Christmas period. And then in January, I said, I'd love to do it, but please remember, I'm not an expert on Picasso. I've never curated anything. He said, that's exactly why we want you to do it, because we love the way you think. We love this room, the shops, the lateral thinking, the oddness. And luckily, it was very, very successful and had really amazing attendance and lots of really great reviews. So I was just honored, honored to do it. It was fantastic. And, you know, I just couldn't believe it, you know. So
is the show going on tour?
There's been talk of it, but I think it's not fixed yet. I think it's a very costly show to travel around because of the value of the work.
Yeah.
But who knows? Hope so. That would be nice.
Do you have a favorite piece that you discovered through your... amazing. You can just dig through.
Oh, I know.
For days.
Because if you think about it, it was COVID.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when the pandemic. So he asked me in 2019, then we had the pandemic. So I sat at this table. I was in this building on my own for 16 weeks trying to keep my business going in this mad world. And then on top of that, doing the Picasso curation. And so looking through literally thousands of artworks, you know, and so then calling the lovely Joanne, one of the curators, and saying, you know that one with the stripes on it? I really like that one. And then she'd pronounce it perfectly in French, of course. And then, but that one's in Munich, and can we have it, please? Okay.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was fantastic. And I played some music in one of the rooms. I played Thelonious Monk, April in Paris. In one of the rooms, which was really special because it was all the pieces in that particular room were from the 1950s, and in 1954 or 56, Thelonious Monk
came to Paris
and he made the album. So that was quite unusual as well. So music was there too.
I hope that in general for museum shows, when the moment becomes experiential, and especially with sound, lighting, of course, as well, you start to feel a fraction what the artist might have felt
yeah.
when creating the artworks. There was a great exhibition, actually, of Basquiat in Paris recently as well, which was a complete different approach, not the usual suspects of like, these are the paintings. No, it was, he was part of a culture, and they had the music everywhere. It was like the texture was there, the imagery was there. You felt like you're entering, you're going to CBGBs. That's how it felt like, the excitement of walking into a space. So I think that's super interesting.
Well, I think right now the museums around the world have been, like everybody, suffered during being closed for 2 years. And then quite a lot of them now having to charge admission, which is obviously something that is very difficult for a young family to afford to go in a museum. So you really want to try and get away, not in every case, but get away from the white wall and the classical way. And you can't do that with a lot of artists because they're better on a white wall.
Yeah.
But if you can do it, and again, what we were talking about earlier is that instead of shove, you know, like push too hard, but just show it on a lemon coloured wall or in a different environment, then I think that's definitely something that people will want anyway, because you can get so much information on the phone now, so you can see all the Picassos in the world on the phone. So if you go to a museum, you want to have an additional experience. You know,
talking about lemon walls and our favorite color, yellow. You're a very colorful man.
Thank you. I thought you'd never notice.
I think color is your DNA. That's the first thing. And joy is the first thing that comes to mind when I think of you and your brand and your output. Where did this love for color come from? Especially starting in a period which was, let's say, a bit more black and white or gray.
Yeah.
To come in with such confidence of, we need more,
I think,
color.
The main thing with when I first did my very first collection, which was in 1976, and I showed it in a hotel room in Paris, in Place de l'Odéon, in the hotel there. My skill was not very creative. It was more of a classical approach to clothes. And so therefore I kept thinking, well, why should anybody buy anything from me? Because really it looks like a shirt, it looks like a jacket. So it's not got three arms or seven zips or something, you know. So color and what has been described many, many times is classic with a twist, where you've got something which is visually very acceptable, but you'll just find that there's a unusual lining or a different colored button or something like that. And so it really came by necessity, really, just because my original collections were very, very simple. And I kept thinking, well, why should that shop in Paris or Milan or New York buy it from me?
What's the difference?
And then color, the thing about color now is I can be a lot bolder with color, because we work a lot with actors and musicians who want to wear a very colorful suit for the catwalk or for the stage. But when you actually realize what you've sold, it's what we've got on, which is a classic navy blue, but with a colorful shirt. So it's when you use color, it's a matter of getting it really the balance right between the extremes of how you wear it, really.
I remember when I just graduated from high school, when I was like 18 or something, as a gift for my graduation, my parents gave me, I could choose a suit, and I went to a pinstripe Portsmouth suit.
I wore
it for so long until like really recently, it just fell apart. I mean, I tried, you know, I had it stitched a gazillion times. I'm like, okay, this is not fixable anymore. I was wearing it until the end. And then the new one came in. There you go.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, David used to, Mr. Bowie used to wear a lot of our clothing off stage, you know, and pinstripe was one of the things he liked a lot, actually. Yeah. And lemon, oddly enough, he had a lemon suit from us. I think that may be on an album cover, I'm not sure.
Really,
But you know, and it was so lovely because you get fans, you know, coming into the shop and saying,
I'd like this one.
Yeah.
The records. Yeah. I just have to ask, how did you do it? from a artistic point of view, from an idea, from a spirit, an excitement of youth into this world. And not just fashion, like you're multidisciplinary, if you want to call it that word.
That's a long word.
Yeah. Practice. Yeah. Mary Poppins. Yeah. And for someone starting, a young person, creative in any field, how can you convert that creativity and turn this intangible thing into something tangible?
I mean,
with legacy.
Patience is the thing that doesn't really exist today, which is everybody, because of the telephone, because of Instagram, Twitter, everybody's got such a short concentration span now. And also, there's so many comparisons you can make all the time in your world, you know, how many...
Excuse me, I'm very analog. I'm not part of that.
No, but in the world of broadcasting or whatever we're allowed to call it, even with analog, which is very nice. The main thing for me was just being very patient and being happy to grow the business very gently and slowly, because I was blessed with a very pleasant life, you know, so I wasn't really searching for anything. I've always had a very strong sense of humor. I met my wife my girlfriend when I was 21, we're still together. So, you know, there was a lot of nice, stable things happened. And so therefore I was happy that it took a long time. It didn't matter. And I think probably that's why it's had such a long life, because you never really pushed it too much.
Going back to the nudge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, never really overcooked it. And there's a big problem, I think, with greed in the world now, where people overexpand, they get too big, the personality goes from the brand or the restaurant or the product or whatever, you know.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Well, I think so, yeah. I think so. See? Sorry. He's not had his lunch. Sorry.
Slow and steady wins. Slow and steady wins. Another longevity. The Rolling Stones.
Oh yeah, gosh. Yeah, I think that launches, doesn't it, today or something?
It does, yeah. This is not gonna go out before release, so don't worry. Yeah. But
I know, that was amazing. I mean,
the Stones are your friends.
Yep.
You know them for a while.
Yes.
They have a new record out after, God knows, 20 years, something like that. You did a collaboration. You designed the record. What else? Tell me. Give me the rundown.
I know. That was another surprise, you know. So we got asked by Universal, you know, their record label, to do a limited edition cover design. So I did it.
That's it. Thank you. Bye.
See you.
Good talk.
And we did a T-shirt. I think the one here.
Oh, wow.
Is there one here? Yeah, there is. Yeah. You know, it's called...
I can hold
that. Yeah, thank you. It's called Hackney Diamonds, which is an expression about, the area in London called Hackney, where... Yeah. Many, many years ago, it was very different to what it was now. And they used to break the windows of the cars and,
you know. Still do that.
Yeah, I'm sure they do that. Well, I do. That's the only way I survive. Yeah, so, you know.
Wow.
So it's just so my handwriting, broken glass, and that's really what the album cover as well looks like, which is nice.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that was a lovely thing to do. I mean, Mick has worn Paul Smith.
Forever.
Well, and Charles. Well, all of them, really. And the new drummer, I didn't realise he was such a fan. You know, he's been buying our suits for many, many years. He came here, actually, just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
Yeah. And I saw the Stones 1971 at the Marquee.
Wow.
Marquee Club. And then what the best one was, I've written it down here because I've forgotten. May 1982, 100 Club in Oxford Street. It was like wild. Because
it still exists, the space, I think.
Did it?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was one that wasn't announced. You couldn't buy tickets. They suddenly did it as a surprise. I don't know how I even got in. Oh. Incredible. I think I walked in backwards and they thought I was leaving. Oh, that was really good. I really enjoyed that concert. Yes, that was very, very good. Marvellous. Oh, yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
Now we know how to get into clubs.
Yeah, just walk backwards and then say, wow, what a gig. What a gig. That was amazing.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite track on that record?
I'm not allowed to say about that. I don't know. I haven't heard them all yet.
Okay. Oh, general favorite Stones?
Oh, yeah. Track? Sympathy for the Devil. It's fantastic. Yeah. That strong sound in it is wonderful. Me damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his face. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my game. What was your favorite moment with Mick or Keith or Charlie? I mean, what's nice is that they... you suddenly get a call like Mick's in Tokyo and wants a jacket. You know, it's just those moments which are always lovely.
Sleep right now, calling in the morning.
Mick who?
Because I went to your show in June in Paris.
Oh, good.
And you were explaining the inspiration for that show was mods in the 60s.
Yeah. And also just the sort of suit that you're wearing, which was... you know, the reinvention of a suit in our minds, because, you know, when I first started, a suit was really for funerals, a job interview. It was very rigid, you know, it's for a specific business or that. And then I think why people like Bowie and many other people liked our clothes, because they were softer, easier to wear. They didn't always have such rigid
shoulder pads and everything.
Yeah. And so that collection was very much about just new ways of wearing a suit, like the one you've got on, really, which is very lightweight and different fabric to what you would imagine.
I mean, you and I guess Mr. Armani as well, like deconstructing the suit in that sense. I remember I used to live in London and then moved to New York. And in London, you see on the streets suits and jackets all the time. It's like the basic uniform for any job, really. Yeah. So to really zhuzh it up, become a bit more dandy, you add color, texture,
needle
or something. And I remember when, you know, just moving from London to New York, just wearing a suit, period, was already like a bit too, you know, so you had to find a balance because you don't want to look like fake either. No. It's just a performance. So wearing something that's like more...
It's the way you wear it, really, as well. 100%,
yeah.
And also knowing your character, you know, have you got a strong personality? Are you quite a serious person? What your job is? So it's all there if you want it. It's just a matter of your confidence and your understanding about how to wear it, you know, whether to wear it with colour or... But now it's great because you can wear an absolutely beautiful custom-made suit with... you know, a denim shirt or with white trainers, you know, sneakers. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I love that, in fact. I love the mix. Mm. It was in the early 80s when, in my little shop in Covent Garden here, really, that I started to reinvent the suit. And then Mr. Armani was doing something similar in Italy where we just made it softer and easier to wear, really, and put a little bit more, in my case, not him, more colour. He stayed very ecru and those very sort of warm colours, whereas mine was always a little bit more rock and roll.
Have you ever had a chat with him about this?
Yeah. There's a picture over there. We could find you in the visitor's box over there.
Oh, amazing. That would have been an interesting conversation.
Yeah, there's a visitor box, Well, I think I'm with the king, aren't I, over there as well? I'm with the king, and you're not supposed to touch royalty, but that picture you'll see, I'm like, kingy.
I love it. But that freedom of the mods, like the two-wheel freedom. I mean, you're clearly a person who loves two-wheel freedom, you know, and that spirit, that energy, the innocence in a way as well.
The mods were very interesting because they, generally speaking, they were from, which we don't really have anymore in the UK.
Working class. Still exists. Yeah.
So they were a working class family, and they were doing something which was like caring how you looked. Mm. I mean, just that was quite radical, you know, how your hair looked and wearing something called a suit, but in a suit.
But with attitude.
Yeah. And also a suit. There was a big group of shops in England called Burton's. There were like 2,000 shops across England. And they, you could get a made-to-order suit there, quite a good price. And so, of course, they invented their own look. So they had a vent at the back this long. Then the you've got that one. I'm going to do one that long. And, oh, Bill's got one that long. And then eventually the vent came up to here like this. and then they'd do the waistband, and the waistband would get wider and wider and wider. And it was great. It's so good. Because it was kids just...
Yeah.
And what I liked about it was, and a bit like the punks as well and the New Romantics, in UK, our self-expression came through the way you looked, whereas in many other countries it's more political or more to do with other things, whereas in England it was just mostly about looking really stupid.
Yeah, the creative expression was embraced, you can just have the space and just go crazy. Favorite track from that period?
What period are we in?
The Mods.
The Mods, Paul Weller,
Of course.
He's on my phone if you want to talk to him.
Yeah, yeah, I saw him the other day on the street.
Yeah, he's here.
Call him now. Ask him what his favorite track of the period.
Yeah, exactly. Something to me. Something deep inside. I'm hanging on the wire. For love I'll never.
To go slightly more intimate, what's your go-to falling in love or heartbreak song?
Oh, she's reading My Girl.
Oh. On a sunny day.
When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. I guess you've said, what can make me feel this way, my girl? Talking about my girl. My girl. I've got so much.
1965, Otis Redding, lovely, beautiful song. I saw them in...
I was going to say, he performed in London, he had a whole series.
Yeah, they were at Atlantic.
Yeah.
And I saw, they used to call it the Atlantic Package. So there was Sam and David, Sam and Dave. And so I saw them, saw him live. Sadly, he passed away sort of... In a crash, I think.
Yeah, plane crash, right?
Yeah. Wonderful singer. Wow. But the whole package was amazing. Sam and Dave,
you got
Edwin
to see
Starr,
Otis Redding when he did his UK tour?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm very
infamous.
Old.
Infamous.
Yeah. I mean, I saw Hendrix. Hendrix lives around the corner from me. He lives in Clarendon Road. I lived in Portland Road, literally from here to that chimney stack. Yeah, so that was amazing.
You saw him perform?
I saw, pardon?
You saw Hendrix perform?
Several times. Oh, wow. I saw him play with his teeth, and amazing. And then the one time I went, there was so much feedback with the Marshall speakers. It was amazing. And then he got the guitar at the end, and he threw it in the air, and there was all this... And it just went like this, almost in slow motion. He walked off the stage, and it just hit the deck, and it was like this amazing just sound. He never came back. It was amazing. It was just in here, you know. He just got you. Hendrix, fantastic. Zappa. I met Zappa in Laurel Canyon.
Oh, wow.
Captain Beefheart.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
What's the sexiest song?
Marvin Gaye.
Oh.
Get It On.
Ooh.
Let's Get It On, 1973. Yeah. Very beautiful track. I've been really trying. saw him.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. We used to, there was always...
Everybody came through London. It still does. But
yeah. Like, but what was good then is you could see a lot of the bands, not Marvin Gaye necessarily, but you could see them in really small venues. Because there were some really good pubs that had, a room above that you'd see really good, like Yardbirds. Rod Stewart, when he was very young, with
Ronnie Wood.
Long John Baldry. Amazing. And then a lot of the unions, student unions, used to have great gigs.
Crazy. You know?
So I saw Pink Floyd at a university union. And it was snowing that day. And they used to travel around in a white van, you know. And the roadies had got everything set up on the stage, but the band hadn't arrived because of the snow. And we, by the time they arrived, we were all completely drunk. And then what was so impressive was they walked in with snow on their shoulders, in their overcoats,
wow,
got straight onto the stage and went onto the wall. They never did any tuning up. The roadies were so expert and so brilliant that they just walked in and just went straight into it. Memorable days.
Wow.
Good stuff, yeah.
I mean, that was really a peak in London music scene, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, we used to dress... Yeah, there's an album over there somewhere with them wearing... Pink Floyd wearing Paul Smith. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Before we head to our last question, when you have a little house party for your friends, a little dinner,
yeah,
you have one drink, what do you play? You have five drinks, what do you play?
Oh, gosh. I mean, probably nowadays a lot more, something a lot more gentle, than, you know, because you enjoy conversation, whereas in the old days you didn't really talk much, you just ate and drank.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I like a lot of the, I like the Luminaires, you know, they're good friends of mine. I used to like people like Jackson Browne and obviously Joni Mitchell. High on the hill. Listen to the sirens and the radio. He said he'd be over 3 hours ago. I've been waiting for his car. If you don't stop soon, I'm going to play with my train set. And that's
it.
I'm really bored now. I'm really, really bored.
Well, before you start playing with the train, let's wrap it up with if your life would come out, you confuse me. If your life would be a movie, and I'm sure there's a Netflix documentary about to happen, what song plays in the end credits?
Have I written that down? Astral Weeks, Van Morrison.
Oh.
Yeah, nostalgic, life, love, dream, and reborn again energy. It's written down here. I did it myself. I didn't get a script writer.
To be born again. In another world, darling. In another world. So Paul, it's been a real pleasure.
Oh,
I could speak for days with you.
I know. Good job it didn't get too boring.
Isn't that creepy hand from the Addams Family, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Shall we flick through some of your beautiful things here? The records, for sure, we have to flick through.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I'd just like to share this with you, which is the useless box. This is if I get bored in a meeting. And then, obviously, Tiger. And then...
Oh, wow. For someone who never listened to an iPod, this is incredible.
That is so cool. Now playing.
P.S.
From Johnny Ive, the boss of...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the boss. My...
Oh, man, I love you.
This is designed by Bob's daughter.
Yeah.
The Usain Bolt, the Jamaican team jacket. This is from...
P.S.
From Patty. P.S. for P.S. So that was nice. That's a really lovely thing. This is an album we did with a special limited edition with somebody called... David Botox. Botox. No. So we've got lots of nice music here. Music galore.
Oh, I love
lots
that.
Lots of record. Neil Young. Lots and lots of Neil Young. And then we've, of course, we have
the leaf.
The famous leaf blower. The key to success. just sheer luck.
Oh, wow.
Old gig posters.
Wow.
From Zimbabwe. They're great names.
These are incredible. Let's create a puzzle.
Drummer of the Stones. Green Day drummer. Paul McCartney, Jimmy Page. Oh, look.
It's like cassette tapes. You're flicking through cassette tapes.
These are Gary Oldman's socks.
Oh, wow.
Made by his son.
His son made that?
Yeah, because I like rabbits.
That is amazing.
Bye, everybody.
Three, two, and give me a smile.
Yves Saint Laurent. I've never been good at spelling.
Thank you for tuning in this week. If you want to listen to the full playlist, visit areweonair.com or our Spotify channel. You can also find us on Instagram and on YouTube at @areweonair. And a big thank you to my wonderful team at Studio Noi. I'm Armand Nafei, and I'll speak to you soon.